we'll be hearing about a new technique hot from the laboratory, which may revolutionise the way that we study the nervous system. Cambridge scientists have, for the first time, created functional networks of nerve cells in a glass Petri dish just by using a small sample of your hair. They created a network of neurons of an important human brain region called the cerebral cortex, which is involved in memory, attention, perceptual awareness, language and consciousness. This allows us to study an individual human's brain cells and circuits in a dish. The findings were published in Nature Neuroscience, and with us to discuss the study is group leader Rick Livesey from Cambridge University.
So what we did was we took skin cells from ordinary people, turned them backwards into stem cells. And that's a technology that's been around for about 5 years now. And then what we did was we basically replayed brain development. So turned those stem cells into the part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, which is the bit that makes up about three quarters of the human brain. It's the bit of the brain that makes humans humans. And that essentially allowed us to watch human development, cortical development, happen over 3-4 months in the lab, which is as long as it takes in, as it were, a real human.
And these skin cells that you got from your volunteers, I mean, how much skin did you get and where did you get it from?
So these are a skin cell called a fibroblast. So you get them from little skin biopsies, a couple of millimetres across. So that's the current way of doing it. The way that that's becoming quite popular now is to actually take them from the bottom of the hair. So a lot of labs now are working on ways to just pull the hair from someone's head, and that'll give you enough cells that then you can turn back into stem cells.
Can you talk a little bit about how exactly you transform this skin cell around the hair follicle into a stem cell and then transform it into a cerebral cortex cell?
Sure. So in normal sort of development, when you're making a mouse or a human or anything, you go through a stage where you start off in one cell, as everybody does, and then you go through a phase where in your little ball of cells, and in that there are what are called embryonic stem cells, and those are cells that can make any cell in your body. This technology that was worked out about 5 years ago by a guy called Yamanaka in Japan, he showed that you could take an adult cell, like a skin cell or a muscle cell, and you could, by introducing a couple of genes, you could essentially back those up so that they became very like those embryonic stem cells. So you're like rewinding development back so that they're like a very early primordial stem cell. So where we step in is we then said, well, can we find ways to turn those stem cells into what is another type of stem cell, but they're called a neural stem cell, but they're the stem cell that specifically make the cerebral cortex. And that was the magic thing. That takes about 2 weeks. And then once you get those neural stem cells, they then, over a long period, churn out these neurons over time, and then the neurons spontaneously wire up to another and start talking to another that were in the dish. So they make neural networks. So after about 3 months, you've got these networks of nerve cells that are what we call firing away. Essentially, they're active within the dish.
And you can measure the electrical activity, record the electrical activity of this neural circuit and make sure that it is actually functional.
Yeah, exactly, which is the ultimate proof that they really are what you want them to be.
So there's some mention of the fact that this might be useful for Alzheimer's research and looking at developing new drugs for Alzheimer's. Can you touch on that a little bit and describe exactly why developmental cerebral cortical cells in a dish might be useful for trying to treat Alzheimer's?
One of the big problems in Alzheimer's disease research is that other animals don't get the disease. So to make a mouse get Alzheimer's, you've essentially got to put human forms of 3 or 4 different genes in, and then they get something that looks like Alzheimer's, but it's not quite the real thing. So there's a lot of interest in trying to recreate Alzheimer's disease in the lab. And to do that, what you need is you need to make the nerve cells that normally get the disease, and then you need some way of giving them the disease, as it were. So we kind of solved the first part, which is Alzheimer's disease is the disease of the cerebral cortex. For the second part, so how would we then sort of get the disease process, we went to people who've got a very high risk of developing the condition. And in that situation, we went to people with Down syndrome. So a lot of people have heard about Down syndrome. It's the commonest cause of learning disability still worldwide. But what a lot of people aren't aware of is that people with Down syndrome have a very high risk of developing dementia or Alzheimer's. So we followed up the paper you mentioned with another paper this week, where we took skin cells from people with Down syndrome, turned them into cortical neurons. And what we found then, on a very accelerated timescale, again of the order of months, they then developed the Alzheimer's disease and sort of features that you'd expect to see in this living brain, but now in the dish.
And what kind of features are you seeing in this dish?
So classically, what you get if you talk to sort of a neurologist about what you see in an Alzheimer's brain, they're two sort of classic things you see. They're what are called plaques and tangles. And plaques are sort of lumps of of protein that form outside the nerve cells. And those are a very early feature, and they're made up of a specific little bit of protein. And then later on, you start getting a protein in the neurons, which is a thing called tau, and it gets abnormally modified, and it moves in, accumulates in parts of the neuron. And essentially, that's what we see in the dish. We start off with these plaques, then we start seeing this protein moving around and accumulating, and actually then we see the final sort of end stages, the neurons start dying.
And when you compare this to cells that you've taken from a healthy volunteer, you wouldn't be seeing...
Oh, yeah, you see none of this from healthy volunteer cells. And the reason it's important for us is it opens up two things. It lets you both study the disease progression in real time on a reasonable time scale. So this is a disease which takes decades in a human, as it were. So we can test, and we're doing it now, we can test ideas about how do you start, how do you get the plaques, and then if you don't let the plaques form, will you get the later stages of the disease? Where can you intervene in theory? The other obvious big use is to use it for testing drugs, which is the other thing we're doing. So with Alzheimer's disease, there are no drugs which modify the disease process at all. So it's a condition which people have this idea that Alzheimer's disease is sort of like an extreme form of normal aging, that people have some memory loss as they get older, and Alzheimer's is just like a nastier version. And that's a misconception. It's a disease which typically, if you get from diagnosis to death, is on average about 7 years. And that's, if you think about some of the nastier cancers, that's typically what you think about. If someone said you've got a disease which from diagnosis would kill you within 7 years, you know, that's clearly not sort of a normal process. So it's a disease that kills people for which we've absolutely no treatment. Currently in the UK, there's over 800,000 people with the condition, 6 million in Europe alone, and the numbers are rising. So it's really important that, obviously we would say that there's more and more research, but also as a public health problem, it's increasing every year.
And also I'm presuming that your new technology for developing these cerebral cortex cells in vitro may have applications and implications for schizophrenia research and autism research as well. So yeah. Other disorders of the brain where the cerebral cortex is implicated.
Exactly. So that's the idea. Again, so what those conditions share is that you're right, they're diseases of the cerebral cortex, but they're also diseases for which we don't really have animal models that we can study the disease. So there's a lot of interest in, again, starting from inherited forms of the disease, see can you create a model in the dish and then start moving on to the more common sort of sporadic form.
That's Rick Livesey from Cambridge University, describing how he's been converting skin from the scalp to functional cerebral cortex networks and creating a new way to look at Alzheimer's.